Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning.
Andy, you complimented me earlier this week, and I just wanted to acknowledge that you thought my piece was really good about the settlement of the 101 Ash Street. Now, you didn't do that publicly, and I don't need you to do that publicly. I don't need people to know that you complimented me, but you did. And so I want to repay
it. Yeah, I appreciate you keeping that between us.
Yeah. But... Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego. I'm joined, as always, by managing editor Andrew Keats. What's up, Andy?
Scott, how you doing, pal?
Pretty well, thank you. Andrea's off this week, but she wanted me to pass along to you all that she was fine on her plane ride.
She even speculated that talking about her fear on this very program may have been the key to unlock her fear.
In other words, you all did that. Mm-hmm. You did that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Means a lot. Coming up on the show this week, Sports Arena without sports. I checked in with the three teams bidding to redevelop that site in Midway. I realized nobody's really done a story just about the plans for the arena itself, which is a big feature of the proposed development. We'll get into that a little bit. It doesn't seem like the new arena will draw the city a new big league team. People need to stop hoping for that, I think, at least in that place.
The other thing is, even if you built the world's nicest arena, there's no big league team that was ever going to come here.
There's that. And there's a conservative contractors group that is hinting that it's going to campaign no on all of the ballot initiatives, including one that one of their allies, a conservative city councilman, really wants. We'll break down their plan and their strategy. And finally, the battle between beach mayors and the county continues. The politics of wastewater, ocean poop is getting more complicated. We're going to explain the latest developments in that story we've been following. We'll get into that. Stay with us. You were on the Kept Faith podcast this week. Mm-hmm. They invited you to do their big celebration of the amazing Padres news this week. So just to review, the San Diego Padres, once considered a small market team that couldn't compete in this sort of high payroll world of baseball, have now assembled perhaps one of the greatest collections of talent on a team in modern baseball history. Is that too much?
Somebody might say that's overstated, but here in this first week of the new Padres, I'm going to allow it.
All right. So they already had a pretty good team with some pretty good people.
Right.
But they got arguably one of, if not the best young hitters in Juan Soto. Mm-hmm. And they got one of the best first basemen in Josh Bell. Mm-hmm. And then they got this guy from Cincinnati, Drury, who's hitting extraordinarily well, can play all of the positions in the infield.
Yeah.
And he's having a great year. And then they got the best closer, arguably, over the last, 5, 10 years from the Brewers. By the way, why did the Brewers do that? We don't need to get into that, but it seems weird. And they got rid of Eric Hosmer, who you and I both have believed, as the first baseman of the Padres, has really anchored the group. They might argue he was great in the clubhouse and all that, but doesn't feel like he did anything to help them.
Yeah, I think it was probably true that he was a leader in the clubhouse, and it turns out it's possible to be a toxic leader.
Yeah.
To be the person that everyone else takes their cues from, and for that to be bad for everybody else.
So all of these things happen. We got, and I can look at the Padres right now and say, like, I don't know that there's anything I want from the Padres more than the outcomes to now come from this. I can't think of anything I want different other than maybe cheap. I don't even want cheaper tickets. It's fine. Take my money.
There's going to be some folks who are angry about that. If a previous tweet of mine requesting less salad in my to-go salad plate, is there any indication? People were really angry that I was running cover for the capitalist overlords.
Yeah.
That I could have just asked for a bigger box.
All right. On the kept faith.
But yeah, go ahead.
On the kept faith, they asked you sort of to talk about what this means about San Diego.
Uh-huh.
Like that we're always trying to be a big city, and what did this indicate? And I thought you had a really good point. You said, well, I think the moment you say something like we should be a big city or we should do big city things is the moment you acknowledge that you're not at all a big city.
Yes.
Because no big city says things like that.
Right.
So I would like, they kind of cut you off and got distracted. I would like to continue with that point for a second.
Okay.
So for me, what the Padres have done is take capital, money, and they have invested it in a very impactful way. Basically all these discussions we have about building cool things or having a nice city, all of that is a function of capital being invested. And one of the problems with this city is that we have a lot of capital. There are lots of people and institutions with lots of money here. But very rarely do they try to invest it in interesting ways that demonstrate excellence. There's only one other area I can point to, I think, where this happened, and that's the research university and the triangle of development and innovation that's come out of it, right? That's an area where capital is being invested in a world-class way, creating like all kinds of different benefits and challenges, right?
Okay.
And I think like what we've seen is the first downtown example of that I know of, where somebody is taking capital and investing in a truly excellent pursuit that rivals big cities and belies the idea that San Diego can't do that, because there's plenty of capital to do that with.
And we can actually measure the extent of its success in the last 3 years when the Padres have, or 2 years, I should say, because 3 years ago, you couldn't really go to the games. But in the last 2 years, the San Diego Padres have ascended to the top of attendance in baseball.
Right. And you could almost...
So all those old cliches about San Diegans having too much to do to attend sporting events have been simply proven wrong by the sheer investment and the demonstration that if you put the money into the product and the product becomes truly excellent, people will in fact recognize that excellence.
But it's wholesale too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the venue.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it represents about like all the different parts of San Diego.
Yeah.
It's their ability to like handle the branding, the food, everything.
To design and roll out these sorts of the City Connect jerseys that are beloved and now like absolutely prolific in this town right now.
Within like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it just sort of belies this idea that there is even a small market in baseball, which makes me wonder, and there was somebody pointed out like, hey, I think one of the groups that's most frustrated by this are all the other sort of small market baseball teams that are using that as an excuse not to make these investments across, including your own Baltimore Orioles, right?
Don't get me started.
Sorry. But I just want to say, like, I think there's either one of two things happening. One is that they actually make a lot of money when they do all this stuff right.
Yeah, to be clear, the San Diego Padres are outrageously profitable right now.
Right. Well, do we know that?
I think we have a good sense of that.
Yeah, and so either that you can invest in this and make plenty of money to keep investing in it, or the owner, Peter Seidler, is just like blowing his legacy wealth, and it's fine because he has so much of it.
Yeah.
But either way.
Both of which are great.
Right. But I think if it's the former, which is that you invest in something and it's so cool that they just get more money, like what a great endorsement of investing in cool things. And what if we did that elsewhere in other pursuits?
Yeah.
It might be cool.
Yeah.
So that's my bigger take on what you said the other day.
I like it.
Okay.
I like it. I think that's a more fully fleshed out idea than I was going to express the other night. So, well done.
Also, when Juan Soto gets up to bat and he does the thing where he like basically flexes at the pitcher with his entire body and says, go ahead, throw another pitch, even when he's down like 0-2 or something.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And adding that to like the Tatis and the City Connects and the Machados, that's just a cool place with cool people right now that I want to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. Petco Park is it's a very enticing location right now. Watching the game last night was just like, this is a really wild thing to be happening in this here little city of ours.
You have breaking news this week about the Housing Commission. Oh, you uncovered several months ago.
It's like 14 months ago.
Really? Yeah. It's that long? I have no sense of time anymore.
15 months maybe.
The Housing Commission had agreed to purchase two hotels. One of the hotels it paid way more for than the market might have demanded. And it turns out the broker they were using for that transaction had invested in the hotel company, the company that owned the hotel, before that sale was finalized, but after it had been agreed to, and he made a bunch of money from that investment. And the city believes that was bad, and we seem to agree that that seemed questionable.
Yeah.
And the city attorney sued him, and there's been a development.
Yeah, the city attorney announced abruptly this morning in a press release that she has negotiated a settlement with that broker, wherein he will return $1 million that he received in fees, like $800,000 of which will go to the Housing Commission. The rest will go to the city of San Diego, and which basically putting this to bed. And as City Attorney Mara Elliott says in her press release, taxpayers will be made whole based on the return of that commission, that fee that he collected.
And so the legal issues between him and the city are kaput. It's done.
Yeah. I mean, so now this was ostensibly, based on documents that we obtained and reported on. This was referred to the district attorney for potential prosecution. We never heard anything about that. District attorney doesn't discuss potential prosecution. So I think
wouldn't that be great if she just texted us updates about that?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I mean, I think at this point it's been a year and a half. It's probably not going on. We have not received any additional indication that that's going anywhere. So, yeah, that would probably put this to bed. Now, what the settlement doesn't touch and what is not said in the press release is whether because the city acquired that hotel, and after the settlement, will continue to own that hotel. What it doesn't discuss is whether the city paid the right price for that hotel. Now, the particular detail that stood out to us was that when we got the appraisal for the two hotels that the city bought simultaneously, one of them, the one that Jim Neal, the broker, had bought 40,000 shares in the corporate owner of, had a backdated appraisal date. The date of the value in the appraisal was returned to the beginning of 2020 prior to the onset of the pandemic.
Did the pandemic have any impact on hotels?
It did, yeah, because discretionary travel was against the law.
Yeah.
It's literally hotels. Illegal. And in fact, it was the logic of acquiring hotels for homeless housing.
So backdating the value of the hotel
from
to before their value was historically magnificently changed by a once in a 100-year pandemic and the restrictions that came from it is an interesting decision to make.
And in the language of the appraisal that did that, spelled out that it had substantial impact on the value, right?
Yes.
And the other hotel that the city bought at the same time, one in Mission Valley, which Jim Neal, he negotiated the purchase of both of these, but he did not invest in the corporate owner of the other one. That one did not have a backdated appraisal.
That one just had an appraisal based on the reality
comparable to the time that they were purchasing it. Mm-hmm. So the concern here is that the city paid too much for that. And in that case, the return of $1 million in fees would not make taxpayers whole.
No.
So that was unaddressed in the city attorney's press release. I asked the city attorney's office, you say here that you have that this will make taxpayers whole. Does that mean you have concluded that there were no issues with the appraisal? And I was told basically yes, that the city attorney's office looked into the appraisal and found no irregularities.
Okay. There you go. Mm-hmm. The big breaking news about the Housing Commission. Good job, dude.
Appreciate it.
Andy.
Yeah.
So I didn't know this, but you know how when a concert goes to an arena, apparently one of the big things they have to deal with is the trucks that the concert or the WWE event or whatever.
The load-in
is a big part of how they decide where they're going to go, how much it costs, whether it's going to be worth it, all of that, right?
Yeah, the whole industry for this stuff.
And so they pull, if they have docks to pull up to and unload, they can do a lot of bigger shows and a lot of bigger acts will do it. If it's too much trouble, they'll skip the town. Mm-hmm. The sports arena does not have this docking situation. It's a ramp. And all of the IATSE workers, the stage
famous
workers,
scene shot on that ramp.
Right.
Right on that ramp. That very ramp.
Describe what you're
talking about. Oh, the film Almost Famous.
Right.
Yeah, the meeting of William and Penny Lane takes place on the ramp.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the stage workers say most of their injuries happen. It's a big pain in the butt. They got to go up and down that ramp. So that's one of the things I learned as I delved into this three plans to replace the sports arena. I don't think people have quite realized that the city has decided now that the sports arena, famous in that movie, the site of the 1975 Final Four, it's going to be gone if the city gets its way. That the city has decided that it will bulldoze the place, and the three bidders who want to take over that redevelopment of that area all want to build a new one. Now, they all want to do a different one. The lead bidder, Midway Rising, wants to build a gigantic new arena, but not big enough for NBA or NHL to be in.
So NHL and NBA arena size at this point is what, like 25,000?
No, it's like 19 minimum.
Okay.
But apparently, and I learned this too, like you can build like up to 14, 15, sometimes 16, but the next 5,000 seats or so are very expensive because you have to do a whole new level, whole new like, and buttress for it and everything. It's a big pain. So that's where a lot of the cost, cheapest seats, most of the cost. And so that's why they're all kind of keeping it here, because the city said, we're not going to give you any subsidy for this. If you want to build this, like you're going to have to pay for it yourself. And they have all decided that the only way to pay for it really is not with sports. It's concerts and stuff.
Great.
And so rounded up all of the different...
This being the case, somebody really needs to go back and fish out the audio of Eddie Vedder during a Pearl Jam performance in, I believe I was told, 98, where he allegedly tells the crowd that, you know, he's been to many, many concerts at the sports arena, and he has no recollection of ever seeing any sports at the sports arena. And so as far as he's concerned, they better as well rename it the Rock Arena, the San Diego Rock Arena.
Perfect, perfect, because I wish you would have told me that before my story, because that could have helped with the headline.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's what they're all going for. So the second place team, the hometown San Diego team, they, from like Monarch Developers, the JMI, that's the group that built Snapdragon Stadium, and they helped coordinate, obviously, Petco Park. They want to build the arena in that area, but they want to build a much, much smaller one, like 10,000, 8,000 seats.
8,000?
Yes.
Wow, that is small.
Yes.
That is hardly even an arena.
Did you read my paper?
At 8,000, I don't know. Like, definitionally to me, I think we begin to really get
performing arts center type.
Yeah, that's like that. I don't know that I would call 8,000 an arena.
Well, he made a very, so this is Eric Judson from that group. He's like, Point Loma doesn't need a big arena. They're not, we need to fit it into the community.
Yeah.
Which I think is designed to appeal to Point Lomans.
Yeah. Okay.
And so there's that. And then the third one, this is the Midway Village Plus. They want to build one kind of in the middle, the 14,000 to 16,000.
No, that's an arena.
Yes.
That one, I think we could fairly term an arena.
Right. And so I asked all of them if this was the place you would put an arena.
Yeah.
If you were like looking at San Diego.
And they were and like, they were like, the mayor said it needs to have an arena.
That's exactly what they said. They're like, yeah, this is going to work. And the city's decided this is where it's going
to
be.
We are replying to a request for proposals that had bulleted list of things that are included, and one was arena. So yes, we think it should have one.
Right. All right. So check that out. I wanted to round up and understand how that's all going. Now, all of that is dependent on the lifting of the Midway height limit. Right now, west of the I-5, you cannot build higher than 30 feet. And the city council decided last week, among many other things, to put the height limit abolition for Midway back on the ballot in November, sponsored by Chris Cate, the only Republican on the city council. It's back on the ballot. Remember, there was some question about whether they would do that or not. It's going to be in November. Now, Chris Cate got furious when he heard that the Associated General Contractors, a conservative, you know, group, alliance of contractors. There's the AGC, them, and then there's the ABC, which used to be the most hostile to unions.
They went through a rebrand maybe 5 years ago?
I think three.
Seven? Okay. Three?
I think it was three.
Okay.
Where they've now said, like, okay, we can work with unions. We'll figure this out.
Yeah.
AGC's been a little bit more still hardcore about that. And they are mad about yet another ballot measure that the city council is putting on the June ballot. And that is basically a repeal of the 2012 Proposition A. Do you remember this one?
I do. I covered it.
Yeah, that's right. At the Daily Transcript.
At the Daily Transcript, yes.
Yes.
It has at times been called a ban and other times been called a... not a ban.
Right.
It's been... It keeps the city from requiring that a large public work project have a project labor agreement.
Right. So a project labor agreement says if you're going to build like an arena that...
Or a large water filtration system.
Right. If the city required that be done by this project labor agreement, basically it's saying that the contractor has to make a deal with local labor unions that says... All the work is going to go through your labor union.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily have to be union members, but they'll have to pay the same benefits and such. And in exchange, those groups will promise never to shut down labor work on that site.
Yeah.
And they will guarantee that there's labor available.
Right.
And the non-union contractors do not like this. They say it mucks up the process. It causes inflexibility and, of course, makes them pay more.
Yeah, I mean, they often call it like discriminatory.
Right. Right. Like one of the groups is the black contractors and they're like, look, this keeps our workers out of there, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Right?
Yeah.
So the Proposition A said you are not as a city allowed to require those on those. Now, the contractor could still do it, right. as we've seen. After that happened, the state passed a law that said that if a city has a requirement like this or a ban like this, it will limit the funds that it gets from the state for infrastructure projects.
Which was a law that was passed by sympathetic lawmakers specifically to change the leverage dynamics at the city level, where conservative groups had succeeded in passing these sorts of bans and they didn't like it.
Right.
So this was often you'll hear, you know, people like local elected Democrats discuss the state law as if it was like,
well, like, that's the rule,
like a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Like some
act of God.
They asked their friends in the state legislature to pass this law so that they could then say they have no choice but to overrule this ban that they didn't like in the first place.
Yeah, this came to a head, as you mentioned, with the giant Pure Water Project, the goal to get 30% of our water from our recycled water or wastewater mm-hmm. turned back into something we can use.
Yeah,
that's a massive spending project.
Yeah, the biggest infrastructure project in state history.
In order to get the needed support for it,
you needed to build it. They needed state loans and financing vehicles.
And to get that, they needed to appease labor unions who have a lot of state power, as we've just described.
Yes.
And so former mayor, Republican, Kevin Faulkner, said, okay, we'll put in language there that mimics some of what you want in a project labor agreement.
Yes. They basically reverse engineered a PLA that wasn't a PLA because it didn't say like PLA in bold letters on the top of the packet of paper, but otherwise was.
But it said you'll use our, you know, a skilled apprenticeship program, things like that, that only the unions do.
Right.
The group, Associated General Contractor, we just described, they sued and said that's a project labor agreement that you have required on this. And they got a settlement out of it. But part of Proposition A said you can require a project labor agreement if it's required for access to state or federal money. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so in order to require the language that they described, they passed another law at the state that says you can't have this money unless you require a project labor agreement on this project.
Yeah.
And so that...
It's just people using whatever political capital they have at their disposal at whatever level of government they have it to go back and forth on whether they want these agreements or not on these types of projects.
So this is...
About the last 15 years.
So now both sides use this. The Associated General Contractors say, look, this proves Proposition A works because it has this exception that you just used through this law.
All of your concerns are about the threat of lost money, and you've never lost any money. The only project that's this ever been relevant for, we're building.
Now, just to be clear, they sued to stop that law, too.
They tried. They tried to say you're breaking the law, but now they're like, see, it's fine.
Now it shows it works.
Yeah.
Okay, that, and now the other side uses that and says, look at how hard and weird this is. Now we need to repeal this law. We're going to put it on the ballot. So that gets you up to speed for today.
This is all background.
So now the Associated General Contractors wants to oppose this repeal of Proposition A that's on the ballot in November, right?
Yeah.
In order to do that, they have been going around town making a presentation that includes the idea that they would campaign to say no on all the ballot measures that are going to be on the November ballot, including this one, the repeal of Proposition A, including the other big one we haven't had a chance to discuss, which we should on a future episode, which is the trash tax. Mm-hmm. Right now, a lot of single family homes get free or...
Whoa.
Sorry. Please don't email me. They get no special fee trash collection.
Yes.
While a lot of other people who live in apartments mostly have to pay a private hauler for their trash collection.
Yes. Well caveated.
Thank you. So that is also on the ballot. They're going to oppose that. And the third one, the height limit removal for Midway. They've gone around town saying, we'll just say no on everything. That'll be great. People will understand that. We'll say no on everything. It'll wrap up the people who are no on the height limit. We'll get some more votes from that. It'll be great. Now, Chris Kate heard this and said, I'm with you on the contractors thing, on the labor thing. But how dare you come at me about this? He said, I'm aghast. It doesn't make any sense. It's horse shit. He was very clear that he was okay with that word coming into the August politics report.
Okay. Yeah. I have more questions about aghast than shit. But go ahead.
He says, if you're going to be running an opposition campaign to Measure E, you're going to go against friends. I was not told they were going to be doing this. I've always been open and honest with people, and I would rather be told to my face that they're going to come at something I've worked on like this. And also, it's construction. It's a lot of construction jobs, a lot of housing jobs.
That's the bigger thing.
It's like, what are you doing as a construction contractor alliance that supports development?
So can you tell me that their calculation here, are they hostage taking? Or do they just think that it's good strategy to A, have a simple message of no on everything, and B, to bring in these groups that you might not otherwise get on your side by, you know, banding your measures together? What's their thinking? Or are they trying to say, hey, you, Todd Gloria, Chris Kate, Sean Elo Rivera, who want this height limit thing, it'd be a shame if something happened to it.
I think there's a little bit of both. I think that on the one hand, they're like, this would be great. People understand no on everything. They already kind of say no on everything when there's too many things on the ballot. So we'll just indulge that. We'll just support that. It'll help us repeal this. Now, and he says, Eddie Spreco, the leader of the Associated General Contractors, he said...
Nice guy.
Yeah, we've dealt with him a lot. He says, look, it's just a campaign strategy. I don't have any beef with the height limit. In fact, I supported removing it before. He said, quote, it's just a strategy, just an approach. It's got nothing to do with the other ballot measures. But if there are no votes out there, as in, like, quote, no votes, then why not hit them with the triple no appeal? And he said, look, a lot of people already feel that way. And look, I'll also just keep it to areas where the no on the height limit is going to be appealed. So it's not going to have any effect on the rest of the stuff. Like, you don't have to worry about this killing your height limit proposal. It's just going to goose votes to people who already oppose it, which is, I guess, one way to do it. But then he said...
I mean, to think you have the ability to, like, calibrate your... message that precisely, it strikes me as like Clinton 2016 campaign levels of hubris. But
yeah. Okay, but then he said, then he did kind of indulge the hostage taking thing. He said, quote, if they're that concerned about it, they shouldn't have let the attack on Proposition A on the ballot.
Okay, so there you go.
As if Chris Kate could have stopped that with his
He voted against it, right?
Yeah, with his lone vote on the city council. You should have stopped it, Chris Kate.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's what's going on there.
Great.
A little peek behind the curtain of how politics works. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Mackenzie Elmer has been doing a great job on the situation with poop in the water in mostly South Bay, in the ocean, and its impact and how they've studied it. They came up with a new technology for measuring it. This caused a lot of consternation. Richard Bailey says you got to go back to the old Petri dishes because your DNA test is messing with our mojo here in Coronado. People are, you put up your sign saying there's a lot of poop in the water. It's a little bit of a downer on swimming in the water.
You have a 5-star hotel here.
Yeah. Folks, can you respect our our goals here? And it's a little weird because summer, there's never been a problem.
Right.
And, or not, you know, we know what happens when it rains in the winter, but the summer, we've usually been okay. We don't have any indication there's a bigger problem. But then Mackenzie Elmer just this week discovered that a vast spill of sewage from Tijuana had happened, that the pipes that carry sewage to the troubled Punta Bandera plant, where they basically just pump it out to sea, farther out to sea, that the pipes that carry the sewage to it burst, right, after a repair, caused, I love how her, she loves doing this, the geysers of sewage to spill and erode the side of a hill.
Uh-huh.
And all of that, millions of gallons of sewage poured into the Tijuana River.
Yeah.
And that plume was heading north. And she got in an argument, I think, with the county, wondering if they were going to close beaches because of that.
Yeah.
And they were a little hesitant to acknowledge, right?
Yeah, there was just very terse response. It was basically like, well, if, because they've set up this standard where if they have visual evidence of a spill, then they will react accordingly.
Right.
But they must have that visual evidence. And so she, after the knowledge of this very large spill became public, asked whether there would be any sort of closures as a result. And they tersely told her, sort of just reiterated the standard to her, rather than helpfully answer yes or no, we are going to close the beaches or not. It's like a very... very like,
why are they being so weird about this whole thing?
Yes, yes.
Like they came up with a test that shows the water is now much more dangerous than they thought it was. But they're like, well,
resulting in actions that they had not had to take before that have significant economic repercussions and possibly significant public health benefits.
Right.
But in either case, or
if they're wrong, like they need to redo their entire new system.
But the baseline reality here is that lots has changed in Southern California beach culture in the last 6 months on account of these tests. It's a perfectly normal thing to ask them to describe to us and to discuss. It's obviously newsworthy content.
So they were hemming and hawing about whether they were going to close any beaches because of this spill.
Or at least whether they were going to tell a reporter who asked them about it after she traveled to see the spill.
So as we're posting the story about the spill and what caused it,
yeah,
they announced that they're going to close the beach in Imperial Beach.
Yeah.
We had a water contact closure in Imperial Beach.
Yes, put out on a press release.
Yeah. So you picked up on something we were talking about. So we reported earlier how Imperial Beach endorsed the new test and said, look, it proves things are worse than we thought they were. You need to fix this problem,
yeah,
in the cross-border environment that's been a crisis for decades. please do something about it.
Yeah.
And the difference between that and the Coronado mayor's response, which was like, your test is clearly fake news.
Yeah.
You should go back to the old test because that was better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't make us close our beaches.
Yeah.
But then there was a twist. The mayor of Imperial Beach, who is not the actual boss of the Imperial Beach staff, to be clear, he's one of, what, five city council members. He's
unlike the mayor of the city of San Diego, who is the boss of the city of San Diego staff.
He joined Richard Bailey, the mayor of Coronado, in a letter to the county saying, stop with this test.
Right.
And then the county supervisor for the area, Nora Vargas, is like, I thought you wanted more clarity about how bad things were. We've been working on that for decades.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Right. So, I mean, it would seem to me that if you're Imperial Beach, that the region has generated its indifference to your plight time and again for the last few decades.
Decades!
This is not a new issue for you. It hasn't been solved despite it being a persistent issue for you. You've asked for help for a long time. You've asked the federal government. You've
pleaded,
asked the regional
government. Pleaded, implored, begged, yes. Protested.
Yes, argued. Yes. And it just hasn't come. It would strike me that if there was some sort of new test of some kind that enlisted a well-to-do neighbor with a resort culture that draws people from all over the world into your plight, that would be to your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
That you might have just gotten from the cul-de-sac at the end of California that no one cared about what happened to you, to now a party in a multi-city concern about the cratering of a major tourism economy. It would seem to me that this test is good news for Imperial Beach,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is basically what Nora Vargas is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't. Maybe I. There's got to be another angle here that I'm not seeing.
I mean, I think Serge's argument, this is Serge, the mayor of IB, is that you got to have data that people believe in to be able to make the case on a broader level. And if people don't believe that this is an accurate reflection of the danger in the water,
mm-hmm.
then that's okay. And I think McKenzie is starting to dig into the origin of like these thresholds that they set,
mm-hmm.
because it comes from that same thing we talked about a couple weeks ago. Like if there's enough bacteria that out of 1 million people or 1,000 people, like 30 of them get sick, right?
Yeah.
Then that's the threshold you cross. But how do you determine exactly when that's going to happen is actually a really involved and deep and long history that is not necessarily something we quite understand and can verify. So follow that story and all of our environment stories are at vosd.org/environment. That's vosd.org/environment. McKinsey's done a great job following this storyline. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in this extended area of the little neighborhood known as Little Italy. Probably not Little Italy, but it's close, and thus definitely Little Italy. Get the newsletter for the show and all of our great columns at vosd.org/newsletters. That's vosd.org/newsletters. You can get the politics report, Fine City, North County Report, and more. Again, vosd.org/newsletters. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice San Diego. Andrew Keats is Managing Editor. Nate John is our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.